What are people up to in town? Find out on Out There, Tuesday from 3 until 4 here on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond. We don't care, we're a little bit late. Today is Tuesday, September 21st. September 21st, that's the year 21. By the afternoon of today, I was able to remember what the date was. The 21st. 2021. Thanks for listening to Out There Today. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. And for today's show, I'm sort of continuing what I had started last week, which was a report back from this walk that I was on, walk, ride, series of marches from Springfield to Boston, September 7th through 13th, that were to support a moratorium, a bill that would put a five-year moratorium on jail and prison construction. And the walk was spearheaded by the National Council on Incarcerated, National Council for Incarcerated and formerly incarcerated women and girls, and the Families for Justice as Healing, and Massachusetts Peace Action, probably some other groups I'm not crediting, a lot of people. And yeah, so we had a series of marches and events in cities from Springfield to Boston. We marched in Springfield, we marched in Brookfield, and we went in Worcester from City Hall up to the Worcester County Jail up in Boylston, West Boylston. We went from MCI Framingham, prison in Framingham, to Wellesley. We went from Cambridge to Boston to Suffolk County House of Corrections, or maybe it's called the jail in Boston in the South End, the Suffolk County Jail. And then we went from there to the State House and were met by a bunch of legislators, including our own state senator, Joe Comerford, who's one of the co-sponsors of the bill. And so, without further babbling on my end, let me just start. So I have a whole series of clips from scattered kind of throughout the walk. No particular chronological order, no particular organization at all.
Hi, my name is Shay. I'm with the National Council for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls.
How'd you get involved in the National Council?
I'm formerly incarcerated. I'm one of the co-founders that was in Danbury that actually sat down at the table and we discussed this, how women, we don't have the resources, we don't get the stuff that we need. Men get everything, so we decided as women and mothers and grandmothers to actually put this together and start these organizations about women and girls.
How is it for you to be on this march?
Oh man, this is great. This is a lot of energy, positive energy and love out here. I feel great to be out here for several reasons. Incarceration for women and girls across the country, right? And also to stop HDR from building new women prisons. We don't need prisons, we need resources in the communities. $50 million, we can do a lot with that.
Yeah. Any thoughts on what would have been helpful for you, your family, your community, before you got locked up?
Yeah, I guess I could say, resources and support, right? And have a lot of support, growing up and stuff like that, trauma, so if I had, folks or places to go, deal with my trauma, probably would have been different for me, as we know, and prison is not the answer. I can't heal in prison. I didn't heal in prison. I was sick in prison. Prison made me sick. So, yeah,
Thanks for driving the truck or the van or anything and being here. You came up from Florida, right?
Yes. I came from California. And I got here. And then when I leave here Tuesday, I'll be going home. So I went from California for a week and then came here for a week and then I'm going to Florida back home Tuesday.
And you got a box collecting money?
Yeah, we take donations and stuff like that, we give it out. Whatever we get in, we give it out, And another thing, we don't do nothing without our women inside. Everything comes through our women inside,
If people listening want to donate, how can they connect or find out more?
They can go to thenationalcouncil.us. They can go to the National Council online and find us for incarcerated and former incarcerated women and girls.
All right. Thanks, Shay. Thanks for your work.
Thank you, and thank you for everything you do.
My name is Pam Socks.
And what brought you here today?
What brought me here today, because I believe that the $50 million that Governor Baker wants to put in for a new women's prison can be utilized better in our communities with health treatments, maybe more boys and girls clubs, more after-school programs, you know, things to help the community than to build a $50 million prison that we don't even need.
Yeah. Do you want to say anything about, like, things that, like, when you were growing up, that would have been really helpful for you?
Yes. Like, when I got out of school, it would have been helpful if I had a program to navigate me through life, because usually when you graduate from high school, you're 18, 19, you're 18, 17 years old. You don't really know about life. But if it was a building or a program could have went to, as well as going to college, that navigated me, I think that life would have been a whole lot better. But I'm from Family for Justice That's Healing.
Thank you.
Being right here is an affirmative act. It is a belief that we can build a better Massachusetts, but the only way that we do it is not just by hoping for that better tomorrow, but by coming out and walking and organizing and picking up the phone and calling a friend, having a conversation, being right here. So first, I simply just want to say thank you. Thank you for being hopeful. Thank you for being positive. Thank you for being optimistic. I'm here to continue the conversation that Andrea mentioned, to continue listening and learning and expressing my solidarity for the work that you all are doing. I know it will seem difficult. I worked at the State House for 10 years in the State Senate. I worked on issues we got up over the hill, and I worked on a lot of issues where you felt like you rolled the rock up to the top of the hill every day, only to have it roll back down over you. But I will tell you, the only choice we can make is to continue the work every single day.
They're trying to build a new women's prison in Massachusetts. And when you look over to my right, these are our baby girls right here. I live in the most incarcerated corridor in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, from Nubian Square up to the Franklin Hill, Franklin Field housing development. So when you tell me that you're going to build a new women's prison, you're talking about my daughter. I don't know where she went. You're talking about our baby girls from our neighborhoods. It's not hell no, it's fuck no. That is not going to happen. Not only is it not going to happen, but it's so unnecessary. It makes absolutely no sense. The only thing that we can think of, and we've done everything, research, participatory research, town hall meeting, talking to the sisters in the neighborhoods most entangled in the criminal legal system. We've talked to the legislators. We can't make sense of what is happening. We have protested every Friday outside of HDR, an architectural firm that is making millions and millions and millions of dollars, not only here, but across the country, building wealth for people that run HDR and prison building companies. We cannot understand why Governor Baker is steamrolling ahead to build a new women's prison. And here's why. We are so lucky in Massachusetts, because we are uniquely poised to create what different looks like. In the state prison, we only have one. I do this work nationally. We're not a California, where we got 1,000 sisters we're struggling just to keep from, you know, committing suicide because they're losing hope. We have 135 women in our state prison in Massachusetts. We've got about 500 some odd any given day. Llewellyn is our person who keeps the numbers. On any given day, including the county jails. Still, that's tiny. But when you talk about building a new state prison for 135 women at a starting cost of $50 million, you gotta be out your damn mind. That's just shovel in the ground. That's not the decades of operational and everything else. And we know, this is Virginia, our leadership circle. Virginia was, I have been navigating 24 months in a federal prison for wire fraud as a lawyer. I worked in that prison crammed full of my sisters here, the core leadership team of the National Council, and the founders of Families for Justice is Healing. Virginia had been in that prison for 17 years by the time I got there. Right? When I had to figure out how do I separate myself from my children and my five-month-old baby boy, it was the women inside. It was Virginia who picked me up and dusted me off and taught me how to do my time. But I gotta tell you something. If we can't figure out for 135 women what different looks like, and we have. We haven't just been twiddling our thumbs. We've been on the ground in the most entangled communities for the past 10 years, building up through abolitionist principles. And abolition does not mean no accountability. Abolition means healing, it means justice, it means accountability. I did not have to be accountable one day that I sat on that prison bunk. It had nothing to do with healing or advancing my life. It was all about punishment, which doesn't get any of us any closer to public safety. The last thing I want to say, just help people to understand. And I want legislators in this space to hear me. We are the experts. Woo! If you have not lived in a woman's prison, I want you to take a step backwards. And I want you to put all of the women who have had that experience in front of you. And I want you to listen to them. We lived in an old, horrible, disgusting prison. Those of us who were incarcerated in the federal prison for women in Danbury, Connecticut, the prison is still there. They flip-flop it back and forth between men and women. That was one of the oldest, most disgusting, just unhealthy places you can live. We understand what our sisters are going through. And if you ask incarcerated women, where would you rather live? Do you want to go live over here with shiny pink walls and bushes and flowers in the ground? As incarcerated women, guess what we're going to say? We're going to say, yes, hell yeah. We're living with feces and rodents, and that's not the point, damn it. That's not the point. And they've been living in those conditions in Framingham for decades. This just didn't start yesterday. The point is, and the other thing, please, I want you to hear this second thing that we want you to understand we have no tolerance for. They go into the prison and they ask the women about their relationships with their children. And wouldn't it be great if you could spend more time with your children? You're not indoctrinating our children into becoming comfortable living in a prison. That is not going to happen, and that is not the right answer. Bring those mothers out. Bring them out if you're so goddamn concerned about them spending time with their children. So we need you all to understand what the right response is, because when we ask you as a follow-up to this march to call your representatives, that's the stories you're going to hear. The conditions are so bad. Well, you know what the answer to that is? Get them out. Woo! Get them out.
You're listening to a talk from Andrea James, a speech from Andrea James, who is one of the founders of the National Council of Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Girls and Women. I'm always getting that preposition wrong. Prison justice work by the women who know. So other voices you heard on that clip, you heard Ben Downing, who is a former state rep, Massachusetts state rep, who's running for governor. And I can't remember who else spoke on that one. One of the things that Andrea referred to was HDR. HDR is a multi-billion-dollar architecture and design firm. They've designed over 275 jails and prisons. And according to an article on Vice, they also monitor activist groups' social media for the government, including people who have opposed its plans to build jails and highways. And they've also generated an influencer report. And, let me just skip to say They have a so-called social listening program. It provides 24/7 monitoring of social media platforms to determine trends and key influencers. The gathered intelligence is then sent to the authorities and used to inform HDR's strategic communications practices, wherein the company creates targeted television, radio, and social media campaigns, as well as hosts public hearings for clients. That's a little bit about HDR. Another thing that I thought of when I was listening to that clip was one of the statistics that was mentioned often during the week of marches and stuff, which I don't know that I got anyone actually saying it in the clips that I recorded and am playing, was about the really high percentage of women and girls who are locked up who've been abused, sexually abused. They've been in like domestic violence relationships and things like that. Estimates are anywhere from 60 to 90 some percent of women who are locked up have endured violence. Let's hear from Alicia Keys, and then we'll come back to more clips from the march to put a moratorium on jail and prison building in Massachusetts.
She's just a girl and she's on fire, hotter than a fantasy, lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire, filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away.
This girl is on fire.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Let's go back to clips from the march walk series of marches last week to stop prison construction in Massachusetts.
Stacy, where are you?
Right here.
Stacy says, y'all get them out, I'll keep them out.
Yep. Yeah. Woo!
People in and out of that prison, okay? And so I want you to just hear a little bit about, we have been on the ground with our own dime, figuring out what different looks like on her own resources and never stopping. Stacy has built Kimya's house, New Beginnings Reentry. It is the model. We are not trying to, we are building models on our scraggly little dimes to create in our neighborhoods what different looks like, so that we can start at the front end with our Reimagining Communities Hyperlocal Organizing Project, and then pushing women out on the back end into Stacy's model, and really demonstrating that we can do this for the numbers. The lowest population in the country is right here in the Commonwealth.
Council, I'm on the advisory board, executive director of Justice for Housing. I suffered dearly and inhumane in prison. They take everything from you, your clothes, jewelry, anything that makes you you, they take from you. They took my baby. I lost my baby girl while I was living in prison. If I was home, she would still be here. My baby was killed while I was in prison. Just because we go to jail does not mean we stop being mothers. I had to parent from jail. The last time I talked to my daughter, the night before she was killed, she told me she was working and knew it, and she got a new job. She was in college. And she had just got hired, and she was like, they're teaching me how to do administrative tasks. She was 22 years old. She was a baby. The next day, I called home, she was gone. In the prison, they wouldn't even allow me to go to her funeral. So, this is how we are treated in prison. They locked me in a cell and would not let me make her funeral arrangements. The prison was locked down for a whole week. And my baby had to sit in the morgue, rotting, her corpse rotting, until we got off solitary. So, you know, this is a trauma that I live with every day. I came home with anxiety. I came home with panic attacks. I went in prison. I was normal, never had any type of mental illness or anything. But today, I have to live with that. Every day I close my eyes, I think of how she was killed and I was not there.
Hi, everybody. I often wonder what I'm going to say when I'm asked to speak. And the only thing that I could really say is that if you hadn't lived in a cage, if you hadn't suffered from sexual violence, domestic violence, and put in a cage with a male guard with you at their will. I need to say that again. I suffered from a lot of trauma. Sexual childhood trauma, domestic violence, addiction that led me into the criminal justice system, that led me into a cage. The women in the prison, Framingham, raised me.
Give it up, Stacy.
Let me lift up some of my sister's names. Angie Jefferson, that's my mother in there. She fed me, she made me go to school. Lisette Navarez, she took me from underneath a bench because the hospital wouldn't take care of my addictive needs. They didn't give me any support. Lissette picked me up with fecal matter, would throw up on my body and put me in the shower, and she showered with me. Lissette Nevarez is out today, 3 months home. Lissette has stage 4 colon cancer. You see, what you all don't know is the prison don't give us gynecological needs. They don't give us colonoscopies. She was bleeding. They took a stool sample. They could have prevented this. HDR, Governor Baker, DeCamp, none of them experienced being in a cage. All of their children are going to college. All of their children are buying properties. All of their children are having children that aren't living in a cage. I come from the Orchard Park area of Boston. China is my niece.
You need some help? Which way are you guys going? Okay.
Wellesley Town Hall.
All right, I'm going to stop traffic so you don't have any this way. So if you guys want to stand on that lane, then I'll just have traffic free flowing this way. Yeah, because I'll stop traffic on that side, so no cars are coming this way. So you guys have a full lane.
As soon as you're ready, I'll stop traffic on this way, and then you guys take off.
All right, I'm going to interrupt that series of jammed together clips. I'm going to interrupt myself and my clip. So those previous clips you just listened to, by the way, this is Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruth Ewerdring. The previous clips you listened to, Leslie Creedle from Justice for Housing was talking and sharing about her daughter being murdered in jail. I was also reading like how she told the, some legislative committee about the fatal shooting of her daughter Brianna Hardy in 2017. She says she doesn't wish prison on her daughter's murderer. She said, I'm here as a mother who wants nothing more than to have that person pay for their sins, to burn in hell, but not rot in a prison cell, because prison is not going to bring my daughter back. And Leslie Creedle leads the Justice for Housing organization. And she said, I've lived in a prison cell as well, and I know what the DOC does to people who live in their prisons, and it's definitely not rehabilitation. She also has, she and Romilda Perea, sorry about the pronunciation, advocate with the group. They both spent months in solitary confinement and say it's essential that impacted people weigh in to efforts to reform solitary confinement. Also, on the previous clip, you heard Stacy. I think she started New Beginnings, a reentry program for people coming out of jail in prison. Also, there's a little clip from, I believe it was the Natick police officer and the march somewhere between Framingham and Wellesley. The officer came to direct traffic around us. And it was interesting in terms of our relationships with the police during the march. So the march, the lead vehicle was a pickup truck with a gas-powered generator and a sound system in the back of it, and some signs, posters, banners. And then there was marchers anywhere from 25 in Brookfield to probably a couple hundred in Boston, and varying numbers in towns in between. And then in the back of the marchers was a van that also had signs on it and stuff. And if any walkers, marchers were tired, they could ride in the van. And then behind the van, there may have been another car, two or three other people accompanying who weren't able to walk. So we were sort of like a block with the truck in front, the people, the human beings, and then the van in back. And the interactions with the police, all the police interactions I witnessed were the police saying things like you heard that officer say, where are you going? How can we direct traffic around you? And when I think about doing marches and things like that, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, I feel like, or maybe not even that long ago, 5 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, the interactions tended to be more controversial, like the police saying, you can't be in the street, you have to be on the sidewalk, you're blocking traffic, that kind of thing. We all appreciated that. All right, let me continue with these clips. Where was I? I can't remember who was talking. Maybe it was Stacy. Not sure. We'll go back to that.
Wednesday.
Oh, no, it's
September.
Me. Okay, so so on this march, it was a series of marches in different towns. And at the end of the day, most people, I don't know, they stayed in a motel or they drove back to where they were from. They got in a car and disappeared somewhere. But I had my bike. Like, I walked my bike a lot of the time. And then at the end of the day, I went wherever I went. And so this next clip is me talking about my experience of that.
It is Wednesday, September 8th, 2021. I'm on this trip to support a moratorium on prison building in Massachusetts. Right now, I'm in Brookfield, West Brookfield. The group is done for the day. People have driven back to their homes or wherever, but I got my bike and I'm spending the night somewhere. The only hitch is it's supposed to rain this evening and tonight and tomorrow, and I forgot to pack a raincoat. And my tent, my little one-person staked-down little tiny little one-pole tent, not so sure how it is in a lot of rain. So it's that time, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I stopped at the library. I did my Wi-Fi business, communications. Now to find a place to stay for the night. Where will it be? The night will come and I'll be somewhere. I need a raincoat and a place to stay. I'm hoping to find a pavilion of some sort in a park that's not on the main street. Maybe a city park or a state park. I saw something possible on the map. But then my other lead is, during the march, one of the people that we handed a flyer to was the guy who said he owned a health food store in Brookfield. He was very excited to support the march. He took a sign and then he came back and he brought us all cold drinks, like 20 cold drinks. Not like sodas. I'm talking coconut water, kombucha, some sort of aloe mango drink. I'm talking health food store swanko drink. They were good. I snarfed down 2. Anyway, I might go to the health food store, see if I can run into that guy, talk with him for a bit and see if any possibilities open up there. More will be revealed. So I went into that store, Tip Top Country Market, natural food store, and knick-knack store, and herb store, and like everything store, A to Z toy store, all mixed in one tiny basement. But the woman at the counter, it wasn't Rudy, but Rudy was the man who came running out, who was very supportive of the march. And the woman, when she found out I was with the march, she was like, oh yeah, Rudy was so excited. I don't know if you know, but he's a jail translator. He translates. He was born in Colombia and speaks like 3 languages. And because his family fled the Holocaust. But he does. So he works in the jails and the prisons often. And that's why he was so excited about the march. And the woman behind the counter, she's an epidemiologist. She did work at Smith College, so she knew about pedal people and stuff. And but then she said when COVID hit, the chair of the department told the epidemiologists, the research people, go out of the universe and fight this disease. So then she got a job with the Baker Administration, like at mass vaccination sites and stuff like that. And I asked about finding a raincoat. They told me there's a store, store that's not a Walmart store, not 4 miles ahead on my route. A customer looked up how many miles it was and how long the store is open till, and now I'm on my way to get a raincoat and hopefully go to like a state park or something. All right, I shelled out $30 for a lightweight rain coat and pants. They only had suits. And then I get like a mile away from the store and on the side of the road here, I find a Columbia jacket. Well, I don't know if it's a raincoat, but still, I grabbed it. Might need it for a warmth or another layer of the wetness, because I bet the other one doesn't last too long. Or maybe someone else on the walk tomorrow will need it. Well, I took this road that headed south towards the state park, and before I got to the place where I thought I should turn, I saw a kiosk. And so I came over to see what it says. And it says Depot Trail, Town of Spencer, Rails to Trails. And here's a rail trail map. I'm at the beginning end of a rail trail that heads into Spencer.
And it looks like a little ways in, there's a walking path that goes to the pond and along the Cranberry River. Very promising looking. Okay, so I took all these ATV roads through the woods. It was quite rough. I'm sort of scoping out places to camp. But knowing that like a mile or so down at the end was like a state park, so I figured I would make my way there and see what was there. Anyway, so I get to the state park. Now it's starting to get dark. And I scoped out a place I wanted to camp. And then I realized my water bottle bounced off somewhere on the dirt road. And I have no idea where. So I have no water. The bathroom's closed. It closed at 4 o'clock. And the water fountain's closed due to COVID. Whatever. So I'm going to go to the park ranger's house and see if anyone's home. That's kind of ballsy, huh? I mean, that's kind of ovarian. Because I kind of don't want them to know I'm staying here. Dang, it's not the park ranger's house. It's just a garage and an abandoned house. Excuse me. You wouldn't have any extra water on you, would you?
Oh, we don't have any water. Actually, we only have our Yetis.
Okay. No, it's fine. The bathrooms are closed. My water bottle fell off in the trail somewhere.
Sorry.
That's right. Thanks anyway. Well, fortunately, there's an apple tree, so it's not like I'm going to die of dehydration. And I'm looking for a trash can, because surely someone has a half-full water bottle to put in a trash can. I don't have any matches, and I don't have a water filter, because there is plenty of water around, but it's swamp water. Well, I found the place I want to bed down under a hemlock tree, and I was clearing out the hemlock branches and hemlock cones. And, oh, sorry, a white pine. A white pine? Ooh, they drop branches, don't they? Well, anyway, I was clearing out under the tree, and I started to put down my ground cover, and I felt something wet as I was smoothing it out, and I was like, what? This ground cover was put away wet. It's been not used for like a month or more. And then I realized it was a pile of poop. But fortunately, there's water nearby, so I washed it in the swamp. Well, maybe I shouldn't camp under a white pine tree if it's supposed to maybe storm a little bit tonight. The nice thing about out on the dam, it's windy, so the mosquitoes aren't bothering me at all. But do I want to sleep in the wind, the breeze, all night long? No, I don't think I can do out in the open. It's too breezy. And, you know, underneath that white pine tree, I don't see any branches. I mean, they're just tiny branches, tiny hemlock branches. It doesn't seem like it's dropped any branches anytime recently. All right, the tent is set up. I got a naked bath in the swamp at dusk, which was nice. I wasn't getting bitten by mosquitoes because of the breeze. And now I'm in the tent, listening to the wind blow, and thinking, well, no, at first I thought, what if a branch falls out of a tree and kills me? Then I thought, what if Dwayne dies from this infection in the hospital in Boston from his cancer surgery? And I thought, oh, silly. You can make up so many things to be afraid of or to worry about. So I'm not going to move the tent at this point. I'm settling in. So just relax and go to La La Land. Oh, I was on the walk today. We went by a number of apple trees, and this pear tree that was like hanging over the sidewalk had so many pears in it in Brookfield. So many pears. And so I was grabbing some, and I offered them to someone who's from Boston or Roxbury or somewhere like urban like that. And she was like, no thanks, I'm afraid of that. I don't eat fruit like right off the tree like that. And I've heard that before, and she said something like, I've watched too many horror movies. I was like, what? Like, what? And
She said, what did she say? Something like, yeah, you know, the grapes are poisoned. And I was like, oh, human beings, why do we teach people to be afraid of such things?
Hi.
You're listening out there on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. It's 3:44 according to the studio clock right now. Well, this is a good time to hear Cyndi Lauper, if you ask me.
I'm Cecilia Dawn. I am a family member of a loved one who was directly impacted by being falsely imprisoned and later found not guilty following a 4.5-year pre-trial sitting in prison, waiting trial. He's a perfect example of someone who, like I said, was falsely accused and overcharged. There were other persons seen with the victim the night unquestioned. There was no investigation. He's a perfect example of the injustices in the criminal justice system, and I'm happy that he's home.
That must have been a really hard time for you and your people involved.
It was. Like I said, we were directly impacted. People don't realize, most people are oblivious to the fact or just ignorant to the fact that people in jail do matter, and we can't forget those imprisoned. And, you know, it was really, really tough on the family, but we all stood together. We supported the his defense team. And like I said, we got a favorable outcome, a not guilty verdict.
Yeah. Can I ask, how did it affect your relationships with other people in the community? Like, did other people in the community say, oh, he's guilty, he's a bad person, or what? How did that play out?
There was a lot of talk about her son's in jail. But like I said, we didn't get much support from the community. If it wasn't for Families for Justice's healing, the outcome might have been a little differently. I'm certain that it would have been differently, but Families for Justice is Healing, they wrapped so much love and support. They empowered us as a family, and we self-educated ourselves, and we went out and we fought as a team. And as we, our new motto is, when we fight, we win.
So, as mentioned, we're a coalition of people and organizations that get together in support of whatever FJ needs, Families for Justice is Healing needs. And we help organize direct actions and fight to pass legislation. If you're wondering, those HDR standouts, the architecture firm trying to build this new prison, those standouts, how did those happen? Organized through People Not Prisons. So if you'd like to get involved, feel free to come up to me. I'd love to take your email and pass it on to someone else. We meet on Saturdays on Zoom, and maybe transitioning towards in-person when that becomes safe. We'd love to have you. As much time as you have, or as little time as you have, we need you in the movement. This is how it works. So appreciate any of you. Thank you so much.
Mass Peace Action, we are here because y'all have a Mass Peace Action said, let's walk across the state and raise awareness. Nobody knows that they're trying to build a new women's prison. Too few people know. So we're here because these folks came, and that's what we need. We need people who can come. We need college students to get engaged. We need a rally on every college campus across the Commonwealth before the end of November, when we can still do it in the frozen tundra we live in. So I think with climate change, we're going to have a little bit longer season that we can do some standouts. If you're a college student, we need you. If you're a member of Students Against Mass Incarceration, we need you guys. Now's the time. Give us a call. Get involved and start to organize and help and connect with other campuses so that we can raise awareness. Yoav, let us know who you guys are.
Look, this is a long march, and we started 6 days ago. Let's keep on the momentum. Every day when we are done with the walk, we are discussing already what will be our next move. Yeah. How can we push the government to stop with this madness of spending $100,000 a year on incarcerating a person, but spending only $15,000 on every kid in school from K to 12? Yeah. And it's another issue, of course, that we are putting $50 million public money to benefit not the community, not the women in the prison and the men in the prison, but to benefit the prison industrial complex. Yeah. Yes? And it's the same logic that led to 20 years of war in Afghanistan. Who benefited from this $2.3 trillion that we paid? Not the Afghani people, not the American people, the military industrial complex. So we have a long way to go. But I'll tell you, yesterday when we walked from Framingham to Wellesley, it was incredible. We passed by neighborhoods, families go out from their homes, you show support.
We're joined today also by Dynamite organizer Saskia. Please come up, Saskia James.
Okay. Hi, you guys. I'm a bicyclist, I'm a bike mechanic, and co-organizer for Ride for Black Lives Boston. And I also work in the cannabis industry. I work at MRCC, Massachusetts Recreational Consumer Council. And I just want to share some things with you today. I can't help but to be very angry that we're having this conversation, and I'll explain why. Massachusetts has made $2 billion in cannabis sales. $2 billion since we've legalized it in 2017. Since we've decriminalized and legalized,
racial disparities
for cannabis arrests have only increased up to 114 times higher in different parts of Massachusetts.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Those are clips from last week's March Walk series of events from Springfield to Boston to stop prison and jail construction in Massachusetts. You can hear archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. Out There airs every Tuesday from 3 until 4. Secret, trade secret. Secret is I'm going away to Kentucky in October, so there may be some repeat editions playing. And Out There is followed by Madness Radio up at 4 o'clock, Tuesdays at 4, and Democracy Now at 5. Don't forget the Tuesday Northampton Farmers Market, Wednesday Florence Farmers Market, and, oh yeah, how about Lauryn Hill? It's me again, Ruthie. I remember something else that I wanted to mention about the walk. So one day that we gathered at MCI Framingham at the women's prison there, and we marched around it. Shaunita Jefferson, she was one of the marchers carrying a banner marching around that prison where inside was her mother. Her mother had been there for 30 years. She had just gone to see her mother a week or two earlier through the visiting room. And now Shaunita was with a group marching around the outside calling for decarceration of all the women in there. Her mom was locked up when Shaunita was 3 years old. And then shortly after her mom was locked up, her dad was murdered. And Shaunita said at one of the events, like, she didn't feel like whoever the person that killed her dad should be locked up. I mean, it's been 30 years. Why should they be locked up either? So a little shout out to Miss Angie. Miss Angie there at MCI Framingham. And Shaunita, too, for your courage and coming and speaking out. And we love you.
Sometimes it seems
We'll touch that dream.
Things come slow and not at all.
They come slow,
and the ones on time
won't make.